We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning and welcome to the morning briefing for Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and coming up on today's show, Hill Vets. They are the organization keeping an eye on all things veteran on Capitol Hill, and Justin Brown is the founder and CEO of that great organization. He's going to join us today for their weekly Hill Vets Tuesday spot, and we'll go over the big items affecting vets on the Hill. Politics. Man, it's some complicated stuff, to be sure, so we're lucky to have Hill Vets here to break it down for us every week. Make it simple for simple folk like me and Jake. Later, Stephen Arango, a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps and a law student at the University of Alabama, will join us and let us know about a petition he's started to recognize Captain George Whitney. Now, who is George Whitney? Well, he's one of the second lieutenant's fellow Marines that he actually didn't know, but they share a semester at a specific school in common. And Captain Whitney, he gave his life while continuing to serve after leaving the Marine Corps in the CIA. All of that and more is headed your way on today's show. And oh, look out, here comes Jake Hughes. Jake, good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. Oh, Lord, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, here he is. Big day for you. You've got your Astros hat on. What's your prediction of the World Series? Not too much World Series talk today because we did enough yesterday. But right. What's your prediction for the World Series?
I can't give you a number count, like who's going to win, what number of games, but I know I am confident the Astros are going to win.
Okay. Well, there you go. At least you're not one of those guys who's like, you're going to sweep them. They're going to beat them 73-0 in the first game. And, no. You know, those guys who think that way. I think that the Dodgers are going to win. Now, I'm a National League fan. I like the National League to win pretty much all the time. And I think that the Dodgers are just a little bit too good. And their number one pitcher, Clayton Kershaw, the best in baseball, they're going to run him out there two, maybe three times if necessary. I mean, if the series only goes four games, you're going to have to face Clayton Kershaw twice. So I think if the Astros get a win in game one, they're in really good shape. If they don't get a win in game one, they better get one in game two, because if they don't, they're in a lot of trouble. So we'll see what happens with that. We'll definitely keep a bit of an eye on it because, baseball is the one sport that Jake follows. It's one that I follow, even though my team is been golfing for quite a while now. They're not involved in the playoffs. I keep having this dream that the Mets will just show up and take the field and replace the Dodgers and be like, we got it now. Thanks for getting here. We'll take care of the rest. But that's not how sports work. Yeah. All right, so how is the anti-smoking going, Jake?
Good. It's been over a month now.
Over a month for you, and it's been like 3 or 4 days for me.
Yeah, I know. You told me.
Yeah, my wife, two or 3 days, actually. Yeah, I got to think back. I think it's like 2.5, 3 days, something like that. My wife out of town for the week, and that meant, last night when I wanted one, I couldn't go get one because I'm not going to leave my son alone at the house and go get cigarettes. So, you know what? After that, I realized like, hey, I might have wanted one last night, but I obviously didn't need one. You never need them, but you get that feeling. Didn't get any on my way into work today, so I'm going to see if I can kind of keep this going and may have some other healthier stuff that I'm adding into my life. I'm looking at sometime in the next week going, now that my cold is almost 100% out of my system, going to a little place that I've been wanting to check out, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu facility, a gym right near my house that, I think it'd be fun to get back in shape and do so in a competitive spirit, because that's how I like to work out. I don't like getting on a treadmill or running in circles or any of that stuff. I like competing against other human beings and showing them how much better I am than them. That's what it's all about. Of course, that's not the truth. But what is the truth? Military Times. You know who they are, right, Jake?
Of course I do.
Of course you do. Anybody who served in the United States military, like if you're in the Army and you go to the AFES at an Army base, the Army and Air Force Exchange there, there's going to be Army Times at the checkout. There is sometimes going to be Military Times, which is their overarching publication. if you have some like Navy or Air Force detachments on the base, you might even see a Navy Times and Air Force Times up there, right?
Yep.
Yep. Well, Military Times does a lot of great stuff, covering a lot of great stories, a big news source. It's again, if you had at the checkout counter at the grocery store, what was the grocery store where you grew up in Houston?
H-E-B.
H-E-B. What does that stand for? Houston.
I have no idea.
Houston.
No one really knows, but it's like the Houston homegrown
eat vegetables.
Yeah.
Because they spelled with a B.
Yeah, that's how we spell it, with a B.
Vegetables. It's down in Houston. We had, when I was growing up, there were a lot more local ones in my area in Connecticut. There was like Grand Union, there was Grade A, there was Finest, which I think was spelled F-I-N-A-S-T. And then Stop and Shop kind of took over all of them, and then a couple other ones came up. But there were a lot more when I was a kid. Then it kind of became, more about the corporate, the big super Stop and Shop, the big grocery stores. But at those grocery stores, you had National Enquirer when you were checking out, or Weekly. Remember Weekly World News, where you'd be like,
"Oh, I love Weekly World News." The interviews with Bat Boy.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, hey, I wonder what Bat Boy's up to this week. Where's he hanging out? Ah, there he is. He's always down in the Ozarks someplace, or the Appalachia. He's never in Connecticut. I was disappointed and never saw, Bat Boy is hanging out in New Haven. No, never happened. But, the Weekly World News and all that. Well, in the military, you had those, and right alongside of them, Navy Times and Military Times, although a little bit more reputable news sources than the Weekly World News.
Just a little bit.
Why am I talking about them? Well, we have some polls that have come out. The Military Times, because of having their hooks into the military community and being totally separate from the military, there is no real tie to the military between Military Times, Navy Times, Marine Corps Times. They're not like the base paper. They're not even like Stars and Stripes, which is government funded, though supposedly no government editorial oversight at Stars and Stripes.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, I don't work there. I don't know. We've talked to some of their reporters, like Nikki Wentling, who's great. She covers everything she wants to cover. I don't know if it's always been the case. I know that in some cases it is. Some cases it may not be. I don't know. I don't particularly care. What I know is Military Times, totally separate. They do their own thing. And they put out a couple of polls about, basically what the military is feeling, is essentially what they went over today. Here's the big one. Favorable views of Trump. How favorable is your view of Trump? Now, let's look at the enlisted side. Take a guess, Jake. How many enlisted soldiers, sailors, Marines, and airmen think favorably or unfavorably of President Trump and the administration?
Favorably, I'm going to give it anywhere from 60 to 75%.
Ooh, you're way overestimating it according to this survey. On the enlisted side, 47.3% say favorable.
Oh, wow.
36.8% say unfavorable. So about a 10% difference. Here's the thing, and we've talked about this before, about what we estimate based on each of us doing 13 years, you in the Army, me in the Navy, estimate on the conservative liberal split in the military. And I think both of us said, even on the cautious side, 2/3 conservative, probably.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what both of us guessed. So if you add up those numbers, this is on the enlisted side, 47.3% favorable. Now, they had a 3-point margin of error in either direction, so it could be as high as 50% according to that. 36.8% unfavorable, and then 15.9% neutral. One, how are you going to be neutral? I can say, hey, I didn't care for either one of them and didn't vote for either one of them. However, you still have to have an opinion on how he's doing. You can't say I take that back. I guess you could. You could say, well, I like some of the stuff he's doing. I don't like some of the stuff he's doing, which is kind of where I fall.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe you're neutral there. But how many people who fall on the liberal side of things do you think are going to look at this administration neutrally?
Not many.
So if we take that 16% neutral, it's 15.9, so let's round up to 16. Could be as high as 18, as low as 12.9%. If we add 47 and 15, that brings us to, 63. That brings us almost up to that 2/3 conservative, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal split that both you and I estimated. So I think we're pretty right on, particularly on the enlisted side. Now, according to this Military Times poll, on the officer side, you've got things looking a little bit different, where 53.4% of officers view the administration unfavorably, 30.6% favorably. So there's a 23% difference there. 16% neutral again.
That surprises me that there's that much of a difference between enlisted and officer.
Well, if we take, again, the neutral side, this is us just going based off of our experience. It's not scientific. The neutral side is going to be your libertarians, conservatives, Republicans, who just aren't particularly fans of the administration. They don't despise it, but they don't particularly agree with it. I think that's where most of them are going to come from. So if we go on the officer side and add those favorable and neutral together, then you're at about 46.6% with a 3% margin of error. That could go as high as 49 with a 3% margin of error for the unfavorable. 53 could go as low as 50. Then you're almost at a 50-50 split right there if you add those two together as far as conservative liberal among the officer leadership. So interesting thing that, again, unscientifically, I think based on what you and I have talked about and what we have seen from our experience within the military, kind of brings that up. Now, we can also go a little bit deeper, and that's why I like these polls. I like when a good poll is done, not somebody putting on Twitter like, which one is your favorite Kardashian? Answer, Jake. What? Which one is your favorite Kardashian?
Harpo.
Oh, that's a good one. I like him too. Let's see. We go by branch. So which branch do you think views President Trump most favorably?
I would say either the Army or the Marine Corps.
You got to pick one.
Marine Corps.
You're right, by quite a large margin. In the Marine Corps, 60% of Marines polled view the president favorably. Only 17% view him unfavorably. 23% neutral. Now, the Marine Corps, I think overall, is probably going to be your most conservative of all the sources, all the services, your most kind of rah-rah American, go-get-em type of guys. If you add up the neutrals and the favorables, which again, based on, this is unscientific, but based on just our experiences, you're talking 60, 70, 81, 82, 82% of the Marine Corps viewing the administration favorably. And that is, it doesn't surprise me. Who do you think would view him and the administration least favorably?
I'm going to guess Air Force.
It's kind of a trick question here, because there are two answers, really. So 45% of the Air Force view the administration unfavorably. 49% of the Navy view the administration unfavorably. So the Navy's got a little bit more of an unfavorable view. Here's the thing. More of the Navy views it favorably, though, than the Air Force. The Air Force has more of those neutrals than the Navy. The Army and Marine Corps are much stronger pro-Trump administration than the Navy and Air Force. Navy and Air Force, both around 38-39%. Marine Corps, 58.9%. And your United States Army, 46.3% viewing the Trump administration favorably. Your neutrals, which, again, is kind of an interesting stance to take, but I guess I understand it. 15.6% in the Army, 23.8% in the Marine Corps, 11.2% in the Navy. So in the Navy, apparently we're more decisive. we just know one way or the other whether we like or don't like something. And having been a petty officer first class and served as a leading petty officer for division on a ship, several broadcast detachments and all that stuff, yeah, sailors are pretty likely to tell you what they think about things when it comes up. The younger they are, the more likely they are, as we've been talking about here the last few days. Petty officer third class syndrome. That's when you put on that first crow, when you take your first step to what the Army and Marine Corps calls an NCO,
yeah,
and you think that you were just promoted to fleet admiral.
Mm-hmm.
And then as a first class, it's my job to kind of nip that in the bud and make sure it doesn't become a part of your personality. So, yeah. There are interesting things that you can infer from these polls. Now, that's the poll regarding the administration specifically. White nationalism, that came up in the poll. So what percentage of military members do you think see white nationalism in the ranks?
That's a hard one, man.
And it's a hard thing to parse, because white nationalism means different things to different people. Essentially, it's viewed by a lot of people as essentially a neo-Nazi movement, which in some cases it absolutely is. In some cases, not necessarily, but I think it's misguided in general. Being a nationalist, I don't see that as too big of a problem. When you start throwing like, well, I'm the real kind of nationalist because look at the color of my skin. That's a problem.
So what percent see that in the ranks?
In the ranks, actually seeing it in the military.
I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to the service members. I'm going to say probably around 40%.
40?
Yeah.
25%. 1 in 4 says they see it in the ranks. So that they see someone who's a white nationalist, 1 in 4 says that they've seen it, which tells me, like, is that, what is that 25% seeing that the other 75% isn't seeing?
I can make a guess, but I don't want to.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's again, a lot of things that you can infer from a lot of these. And apparently, according to the Military Times, and you can find all about these polls by visiting their website. But of course, be sure to visit ours too, connectingvets.com.
But us first.
Yeah. Check out us first. Concerns about those groups were more pronounced among minorities. 42% of non-white troops who responded said they have personally experienced examples of white nationalism in the military versus about 18% of white service members. You may be wondering, what were the percentages that answered? It's about 76% white answered the survey, about 9% African American, and 8% Hispanic, and you can go down. There's a whole list of that. There were 5% of those polled left comments complaining that groups like Black Lives Matter weren't included among the options as threats to national security. So the white nationalists were included as a threat to national security, but Black Lives Matter was not. And some people expressed a concern with that.
Well, what I didn't want to say before is, but I think the numbers bear this out, is that when you talk about 25% of, I think it was the Army, looking at that, that sounds like the percentage of non-white soldiers, you know, adding up Hispanics, African-American, Asians, and all that stuff.
It could be. It's closer to that.
Because they would see that more readily than a white guy, like a corn-fed white boy like me, I'm not going to notice it because it's never going to happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, if it happens to them, they're more readily going to see it.
Right. It's very interesting. Now, this margin of error, they say roughly 3%. So survey audience, they tried to keep it close to what the numbers of who's serving where. 86% male, 14% female, mean age of 30 years old. That means essentially the average person was 30 years old. If you take all the ages, add them up, divide them by how many people were there 30 years old.
I don't know math.
Yeah. I took a class called Math for the Liberal Arts because I didn't want to take the next hard level.
What is Math for Liberal Arts?
It was great. It was essentially odds, interest rates, and actual usable math, like things that you use in your actual day-to-day life.
Things they should be teaching in high school, but they don't.
Yeah, not like algebra and stuff. Like, there was a lot of things on, we use cards. It was actually the best math class I've ever taken in my life. I knew some of the stuff from playing poker. But, you know, we use like cards to do odds, like, hey, what are your chances of pulling out a heart in a deck of 52 cards? If this number of cards, you know, it's your, what, ace through 10. So that's 10 cards, 11, 12, 13, I think 13 cards, 13 out of the 52 are each suit. So you essentially have, like, you know, your different odds on what's going to come up. So anyway, 76% white, the respondents, 8% Hispanic, 9% African-American, 2% Asian, 5% other ethnicities. Respondents were able to select more than one race. So what you're saying essentially is that you thought that that number probably came pretty close to the number of minority folk who were taking the exam. So 9% African-American plus 8% Hispanic, you're looking at 17%, 2% Asian, that's 19%, 5% other ethnicities would bring you up to 24%. So pretty close to that 1 in 4. So you may be on to something there, although, you know, we don't know.
No, I could be wrong.
It was given to 1,131 responses came back from active duty troops, standard methodology used. It was voluntary, confidential online survey. Here's the issue with surveys that can come out, particularly ones like this where you don't know, you know, they got 1,131 responses. Well, out of how many that you sent out, how many people answered, how many people didn't? There are people like me who will be like, I don't really want to take a survey. I'm more interested in the results, not interested in contributing too much to them. It reminds me of when I was in college and we would discuss the alleged and reported sexual assault epidemic on campuses, where there was the statistic that was thrown in out there saying 1 in 5 women on a college campus across the country are going to be victims of sexual assault by the time they graduate. I looked at that number and said, there's no way. If there is, then this I should be witnessing events of this. If it's happening to 20% of the people, that's an insane number. You start looking into the study that was brought up by that, and the people who did the study said, listen, not a scientific survey, essentially. And also, it was the same type of survey where people had the option of responding. The problem with that is you're going to get more people responding who are involved and interested in the issues than those who aren't. So someone who has been, in the case of this study, this is what the people who did it said, someone who has been sexually assaulted is more likely to respond to a survey about sexual assault than someone who hasn't. So that's why it can become an issue. So when you have a thing on like the administration and national security and the white nationalist movement and all that stuff, you're more likely to elicit responses from people who are really interested in that one way or the other. So you just don't know if you're actually getting the proper response. You kind of have to have, you know, a group that you know how many went out, how many you get back. Everybody has to answer it, so that way you get their answers. And still, even though they put it out and didn't get responses from everybody, you had 15.9% neutral on the administration, about 16% total in the enlisted and officer side each. That's the one thing where it matched up evenly over there, which is interesting. And there's also the thing when it comes to this administration that I've had the conversation with people before in the military and outside. I've seen reported many places that your military voted about 2-1 for President Trump during the election. But again, that number is based on who was willing to tell you that. There's a lot of people who voted for the guy who won't tell you about it because
true.
They know they're going to get the reaction like, oh, you voted for him.
I only can tell because, again, this is probably the most scientific thing you're ever going to hear from me. I know because I saw more Ron Paul bumper stickers than I saw Bernie bumper stickers.
Yeah. Well,
so that's how I'm getting my numbers.
He was an interesting phenomenon. I was, you know, in college as he started his campaign, I was finishing up, and there were a lot of college students who were fans of him. He did a very interesting interview with the New York Times where he essentially said in that great voice where he sounds kind of like... I don't know exactly who he sounds like. He always reminded me of Principal McVickers from Beavis and Butthead. Oh, we're gonna get the banks. Gonna get them to give back money. He had all these great ideas of things he wanted to do, but when he gave the interview to the Daily News in New York, who had supported him and come out for him, they asked him how he was going to do those things, and he didn't really have an answer. Always reminded me of the you know, the kid in like middle school who runs on a campaign of ice cream for everybody. No homework forever. Like, well, how are we going to do that, man? That's not really going to happen. Stop it. So, yeah, that's how I kind of viewed that. But, yeah, this is interesting. And then another one of the other headlines of this poll, as we see it, troops support the Trump administration's transgender policies. Does that surprise you?
Honestly, not really.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. Doesn't surprise me at all. When I heard all of the people up in arms about the Trump administration's move on this, I was like, okay, I understand that society based on some things that a lot of people seem to believe now. Also, I think very vocal groups, whether they're the largest groups in the country or not, I think in the military, that's a community that, again, very closely tied to, very familiar with the way that, not everybody, but very familiar with the way that in general things go and things think. Let's see, we have 53% saying they supported the comments in July stating the military should not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity. 38% saying they strongly approve of the stance. So 38% saying, yeah. 35% disapproved of the comments, 24% strongly. So only 1 in 4 disapproved of that. So that's a pretty small amount that disapproved strongly. It's what, about 1 in 3 or so that disagreed not as strongly there. So people were just like kind of eh. And again, 12.6% neutral. That's a neutral where I think it's harder to figure out which side it falls on, where there might be people who are pro-transgender and don't want to say it for fear of the people who are anti-transgender in the military saying that. But it doesn't surprise me at all. It doesn't. And it's something that, you know, the national discussion on it has changed over time and it's become more accepted. And I have no problem with anyone who lives their life as long as they are a good person who's not trying to hurt anyone. At the same time, there are things that happen around this country that make me go, what the heck is going on? And it's not bigoted. It's not anything. It's when people tell me that, well, there's no such thing as gender. Men and women are just the same thing. I'm like, you know, I'm pretty familiar with quite a few men and quite a few women, and there are quite a few differences, some of which are, you could say, cultural, some of which are not, some of which are physical. Men are bigger than women. Men have wider shoulders than women. I mean, they're just, there are differences, but there are people who are out there telling us that they're not. And I think some of, you're going to see more and more blowback against that. And in the military, I don't even think it's blowback. I think it's just, listen, this is the way we feel. This is what we are. And again, Jake and I both estimate probably about a 2/3 to 1/3 split, maybe even more. You've said at times of, more conservative to liberal leanings within the military.
If I can, real quick, I do think it needs to be said that I honestly believe that the pushback against the transgender thing or the approval of the transgender ban is not because, ew, trans people. It's more of because the logistics of it and that doing the mission and all that good stuff. I think it's not coming from a place of bigotry. It's coming from a place of common sense and practicality.
Could be. I think it's a little bit of both myself. I think there are those people out there who are just like, ew. And I think there are those people out there who say like, it just doesn't make sense and it doesn't increase readiness. So if it doesn't increase it, what does it do? You're listening to The Morning Briefing. Justin Brown of Hill Vets back after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
That wasn't the right song. There you go. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Briefing here on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day. Don't mind if I do, Corey. All right. So be sure to follow us on social media. We are at Connecting Vets on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Those are the best ways to keep up to date on what we're doing. Facebook in particular, you're going to see our updates on the great stories that we're covering every day. And each and every one of those stories focuses on the veteran angle of something that's happening in the news, something that's happening in the world. Like, how about this 22 telling untold stories from vets returning from war? How about veterpreneurs who were sharing ideas and experience in a veteran speakers bureau? Some information about Arlington National Cemetery you probably don't know. Some stuff on Hacksaw Ridge and Bo Bergdahl. Now, they've said his sentencing has been pushed back to Wednesday. We're planning to have some former JAG officers come on and talk about that sentencing when it does happen. But again, if it's pushed back to Wednesday, it's probably not going to be before we go off the air with the live show at 8:30 Eastern, 5:30 Pacific. But, you know, it's one of those things that we're going to talk about after it happens. As we talked to Brian Buffard from JAG Defender, and you can find that story on ConnectingVets.com, he thinks that the days that it'll be measured more in days or months as opposed to years for Bergdahl. So life in prison is on the table. He's a deserter in a time of war. There's a lot of stuff that's on the table, but I think what Buffard's point was that they're going to take into account the fact that he was held by the enemy for several years. He's kind of already served a bit of a prison sentence over there. Now, is that going to happen? Don't know. Brian Buffard is a former Navy JAG, still licensed to practice military law in courts martial, even though he is now out of the military. He still does operate within the military courtroom, as well as in the state of Texas. Kind of has a good idea of how the whole thing works. And his guess is that they're basically just going to, you know, have Bergdahl, if he serves any time, a couple weeks, couple months, and then see you, get on out of here. Bad conduct, discharge, or whatever they're going to do to him. Very interesting story. We'll be following it here on The Morning Briefing and, of course, at ConnectingVets.com. And as I said, at ConnectingVets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, follow us now or you're messing up. That's all I got to tell you. There you go. That's the first class in me coming out and letting you know about all of that. Now, we are about to talk to a second lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps who is doing something very interesting when it comes to trying to raise awareness and trying to do one of these things that, you know, I've never particularly done a lot of, and that is, you know, getting involved with like a petition. Yeah, I have things that I'd like to see done, but yeah. I don't know. I've never gotten involved in it, but this young man has. His name, Stephen Arango. He is a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps and a law student at the University of Alabama. He's joining us to let us know about the petition that he started to recognize Captain George Whitney, who is one of his fellow Marines who gave his life while continuing his service in the CIA. So, Stephen, good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Morning Briefing.
Morning, sir. Thank you for having me.
Oh, don't call me sir. That's upsetting to me. As one of those former enlisted guys, come on, Lieutenant, you can do better than that. But as I mentioned, you are a student at the University of Alabama School of Law. But give us just a little bit of your background. You're a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps now. When did you first join the Marine Corps? What did you do? How long have you been in? Give us just the background on yourself.
Absolutely. So after I graduated college a couple years ago, I joined the Marine Corps. I went to Officer Candidate School and graduated in commission, and then I was sent straight on orders to law school. So I've been in the Marine Corps for almost a year and a half now, and basically my whole time has been at OCS or here at law school. And once I graduate law school, I'll go back to active duty, head to TBS, Naval Justice School, and then hit the fleet.
Wow, so looking to go into the JAG Corps, I'm assuming. They don't put too many lawyers into too many other jobs, so is that the plan for you in the future?
Yes, sir. So I'll head back, and I'll join the judge advocates in the Marine Corps, and then, you know, like I said, go wherever the Marine Corps sees fit.
Now, was any part of that decision based on the movie A Few Good Men that made you want to go into the JAG Corps?
You know, I actually didn't see that until after I decided to do a law contract in the Marine Corps. My grandfather, he was a Marine. He served on Kwajalein Atoll and Roy Namur. He was a sniper in the Marine Corps, so I grew up around Marines. You know, he's my hero, and so that's what made me want to be a Marine.
Ah, okay. So it wasn't Jack Nicholson, Tom Cruise, and the rest of the
Although that's a fantastic movie, don't get me wrong. I do enjoy a couple lines from that movie for sure.
Absolutely. Although I think your military trials and court-martials tend to be a little less entertaining than the one that took place in there.
That's the rumor. They try to keep it a little bit more key, I hear.
A little bit closer. And of course, as I just mentioned, we got a big one coming up with Bo Bergdahl. As someone who is in the Marine Corps and going through law school at the University of Alabama, though, so not everybody else in your class, not like you're going to a military law school. Has there been any interest in the fact that you are a Marine in military law when you're going to law school? Have your professors or your fellow classmates expressed any interest or asked for your opinions on things that have popped up in the news, like, oh, Bo Bergdahl or Mr. Rapone, who was the West Point cadet who was espousing communism, that kind of thing? Has it come up at all?
Well, you know, I think the topics come up. People might ask my opinion more on PT, you know, how do you do pull-ups, stuff like that. Maybe more interested in that, but Alabama's got a great veteran presence, especially the law school. There's three other Marines in my class. We have a couple soldiers, airmen, and sailors, so they do a really good job of recruiting veterans and getting in there. So I will say the diverse thought and, you know, the conversations we have about, you know, the military code of justice and how that applies. And so, I mean, those conversations do come up, and we also have some great professors that have a background dealing with the military and the government side. So they definitely do come up in class.
Well, during your academic career, and we're speaking with Second Lieutenant Stephen Arango, who's a United States Marine who is currently at law school at the University of Alabama. During your academic career, you did go to another school for at least a semester, that being Bates. And you can tell us a little bit about that school. And you have, because of that, ties to Captain Whitney. Now, you have a bigger tie than attending the same school for a semester in that he was also a Marine, someone that you didn't know personally, but someone that you had that tie to. Can you tell us just a little bit about Captain Whitney and about your ties to him and how you became aware of him?
Yeah, absolutely. So long story short, I was reading a New York Times article one day, and it mentioned Captain Whitney and how he was killed in action. And I saw, oh, you know, Captain Whitney went to Bates College. I went to Bates College for a semester. And then it said he was a Marine. I was like, oh, well, I'm a Marine. And, you know, I just felt immediately moved that, you know, he had to be honored. So I called Bates College, or I actually emailed them. I emailed the president directly, and I asked her, you know, had he been honored? And they said they wrote an obituary, and that was kind of it. And so I offered, well, a mentor of mine, Colonel Lee Busby, he makes busts of men and women that were killed in action in Iraq and Afghanistan, just out of the goodness of his heart. And I said, I will raise these funds, every single penny. I will fly the bust up there. You just have to find a spot for me. And, you know, I think Captain Whitney deserves that. I mean, Captain Whitney is the epitome of a warrior monk, something all Marines want to be. He's the epitome of selfless and humble sacrifice. I mean, for those of you that don't know of Bates College, it's an incredible school, great academic school. He could have gone and worked at the New York Stock Exchange and made millions of dollars. but he chose to be a recon Marine. He chose to be a paramilitary officer in the CIA, and he gave his life for our country. So I thought the least we could do is to honor him. And so students at Bates College every day could walk by a bust and say, you know, that is a Bates alumni. That's what I want to strive to be. So unfortunately, we've had some pushback from the school. And then I got in contact with the Whitney family. And that's when this kind of started to explode. And, you know, for the last month and a half, I've been working with alumni, veterans, people all over the country and some around the world to try to get this project done.
Now, tell us a little bit about Captain Whitney, because he was killed in action. He was a Marine, but he actually wasn't killed in action during his time in the Marine Corps, correct?
Right, yes, sir. So he was a recon Marine, and then he was recruited by, he actually went to the State Department for a little while, and then he joined the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was killed in action as a paramilitary officer. All of the, you know, materials, information on that are still classified, so I don't have any knowledge to that information, but I can say that everyone I've talked to, whether it's people that served with him at the State Department, in his unit as a recon Marine, every single person said, I mean, he was a superhuman. And for those of you that don't know the training that goes into being a recon Marine or a paramilitary officer, I mean, not only do you have to be, you know, brilliant and sharp and be able to think on your feet, you also have to be physically and mentally just above and beyond. I mean, it takes something special to be a Marine, and then you have to add a little bit extra to get through that recon training. So, you know, Captain Whitney graduated cum laude from Bates College with a degree in, I think, classical literature. You know, he was a captain on his lacrosse team. He was the starting fullback on his football team. So a two-star athlete, graduated cum laude, and then said, you know what? I want to serve my country. I want to join the Marine Corps. And it's just that type of, you know, selfless service that, you know, I think a lot of people, we strive to be, but when we see examples of it, we should want to, you know, remember it. We should honor it. And someone like Captain Whitney, and that's, you know, what I'm hoping to do.
The story reminds me a little bit of, and it comes to mind because I served in Afghanistan, and the largest U.S. base close to me was Camp Span, which was named after Johnny Span, who Mike Span, as most people know him, was also a former Marine who served in the Central Intelligence Agency and was killed at the Kalai Jangi uprising, essentially, the Taliban prisoner uprising, the one that involved John Walker Lind, the American Taliban, as, of course, he was called. But when it comes to the fact that you've had to put forth a petition, essentially, to take a look at this, and we're speaking with Stephen Arango, who's a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps, student at the University of Alabama, also did a semester at Bates College, which is the same place where Captain George Whitney, one of Stephen's fellow Marines who gave his life while continuing to serve in the CIA, also attended school. The fact that you've had to start a petition for this tells me that, at least now, it's not something that the school has seemed very interested in doing. Have they given you a reason for that? Is it a financial reason? Is it because, you know, he wasn't technically serving in the military, he was serving in the CIA? I mean, have you gotten any inkling over why they haven't decided to do something on their own?
You know, and a real quick aside, sir, Captain Johnny Michael Span, Colonel Lee Busby, the artist of this project, the first bust he ever did was of Captain Span. And he actually did it with his father, and it was actually on display at the University of Alabama. So that's my quick aside on Colonel Busby and Captain Span. But, you know, the school has given a couple reasons, one being they have never done a bust. So they're, you know, they are holding back on, you know, making that change on campus. And, you know, my response to that is, you know, we're always changing. And I know change can be scary at times, but this is the right thing to do. And it could ruffle some feathers, and it could, again, you know, cause a catalyst or people to speak up, but it's the right thing to do. And people will coalesce behind it, and they are coalescing behind it. Secondly, they're worried that if they do a bust of, you know, Captain Whitney, other veterans will feel left out. And I had two responses to that. One, when veterans and active duty and reservists, we see military men and women honored, we're proud of that. We don't feel left out. We're excited because not only are you honoring him or her, but you're honoring the military community as a whole. And I also address that issue because with Captain Whitney, we're going to put the bust on a huge marble slab. And on that marble slab, we're going to carve in every Bates veteran that's graduated from Bates College and has served our country into that slab. So every single name that has served our country from Bates will be on that slab, and then Captain Whitney's bust will be on top. So the whole thing will be a memorial for veterans. And on Bates campus right now, there is not one veterans memorial. So I think this would be a perfect way to start that campaign of honoring our veterans on Bates campus, honoring everyone, and specifically honoring Captain Whitney.
You know, I attended college after I finished my 13 years of service, and there was a veterans memorial that they had on there, and I always liked taking sometimes a little bit of an extra couple of steps to go around the specific courtyard where it was, but it was always nice to know it was there, even if there weren't a ton of veterans on campus when I was going there. Now, do you think the fact that Bates, I mean, to my knowledge, is it's a fairly small school. I mean, we're talking like 2,000 students or so, isn't it?
Right.
Do you think that that and the fact that, you know, it's a private liberal arts school, you know, in Maine, essentially, do you think that the fact that it's a small school and it doesn't want to court anything that could be seen as controversial by anyone who's going to the school, so that might be behind it?
You know, I absolutely think that could be behind their decision. I mean, they're a private school. Their job is to make a profit. So I do understand that. But at the same time, this, again, is a gentleman that gave his life. I mean, he is the epitome. You know, if you look at the Bates College credo and what they're trying to instill in their students, Captain Whitney, above and beyond, exemplified these attributes and characteristics. I mean, he took this, you know, it cost about $55,000 a year to go to Bates. So he was probably in $200,000 of debt. And again, he wasn't worried about that. He wasn't worried about making millions of dollars on the New York Stock Exchange, which there's nothing wrong with. But he decided, hey, I want to serve my country. And so, you know, Bates, you know, might have that fear in the back of their mind. But, you know, when they're trying to teach diversity of thought and they're trying to teach their students, I mean, what a better example than to look at Captain Whitney and say, you know, this man, you know, he could have done anything in the world, yet he decided to selflessly serve. And that's, you know, when we're trying to teach students and, you know, bring them up and have them understand, you know, the world as a whole, what a better, again, person to look at, for example. And I think he'd be a wonderful piece right next to the football field where students walk by on that campus.
What has the reaction been to the output that you've put out there and getting this petition going? What has been the reaction, and has there been any from the school?
You know, the school has, you know, I've tried to keep communications up with them, but outlook from veteran alumni and just alumni from Bates has just been incredible. You know, we have two gentlemen that were friends with Captain Whitney, Aaron Sells and Brad Ainsley. They are working with me on this project. They're actually raising funds for a scholarship in Captain Whitney's name, which they're expecting to be $500,000 to $1 million for that scholarship for Captain Whitney.
Wow.
And we've actually attached the bust with the scholarship for the school. So we're saying, you know, hey, we want to give you the scholarship, but the bust goes along with it. And the reason is because if you just give the money, Captain Whitney is going to be forgotten. The only person that's going to know about Captain Whitney are the couple kids that get the scholarship. But if there's a bust on campus and every day there's parents, students, professors walking by and they see that bust and they say, who's Captain Whitney? I've heard that name. And then they look him up and then they see the scholarship and say, wow, you know, I want to give money to that scholarship. Or, wow, you know, I know a student that exemplifies those characteristics. He should apply for that scholarship. So, you know, the bust helps the scholarship and the scholarship helps the bus, and they kind of go hand in hand. I mean, there's a couple other people. The Whitney family has been tremendous throughout this since day one. Karen Whitney, I just got off the phone with her tomorrow. We're going to fly her in to Tuscaloosa soon so she can see the bust and work with Colonel Busby to get the exact likeness of her son. And Lieutenant Colonel John Custis, who is a Bates alumni and a Marine, he's been helping behind the scenes, and I know he probably is going to kill me for mentioning his name because he's probably one of the most humble gentlemen I've ever met, but he's worked too hard for his name to not be mentioned. I know he doesn't want credit, and that's not why any of us are doing this. I've told him and other people, you know, I could care less if my name's even put on this. If Bates said tomorrow, hey, we want the bus, but you can never come on campus again. Okay. Don't put me in the newspapers. Don't put me on the reporters. I don't care. But I just want Captain Whitney to be honored. And because for the next 100, 200 years with Bates students walking next to him and seeing him, I promise you Bates will churn out even better students than they are now.
What has been where are we now with the petition? Where does it stand?
So I believe we're over 2,000 signatures. We've got a couple articles coming out soon in Washington Post, Bloomberg, the Daily Beast. So journalists are starting to pick up the story. Really, you know, the financial side of this, the money is going to be raised. You know, if I pick up the phone tomorrow, it's not the end of the world to try to get the money. Right now, what we're trying to do is to get the word out about the project. So I've literally during class, after class, don't tell my professors that it's during class sometimes, but, you know, sending out hundreds of emails to journalists and reporters and just saying, hey, would this be a story you want to cover? you know, I've recruited students from the University of Alabama Communications Department to kind of help me with the social media side. You know, I've got finals coming up, so I'm kind of running out of time to really work as hard as I'd like on the social media aspect. So, you know, my main goal right now is to get the word out about it, to contact journalists, have them write stories on it, get reporters interested. And I think it's a fascinating story. I mean, you've got a lot of Marines, you've got a lot of alumni, you've got an infantry officer who sculpts like Da Vinci, you've got another infantry officer that is working behind the scenes with Bates alumni. So, I mean, there's a lot of aspects going on here that I think once journalists hear about it, it's just, you know, getting them to read my emails or LinkedIn messages. That's the tough part.
Yeah, that can definitely be the difficult part. We're speaking with Stephen Arango. Stephen is currently at the University of Alabama, where he is a law student. He's also a second lieutenant in the United States Marine Corps, and he's working on trying to get a bust to recognize the sacrifice made by Captain George Whitney, former Marine who gave his life, killed in action while continuing his service with the CIA. Now, of course, you're in school, but you are a Marine. You're doing this on your own time. This is not something that the Marine Corps is basically having you do. This is something that you're doing on the side. Has there been any response from the Marine Corps on this as far as how they feel on it?
You know, I haven't reached out to them. Obviously, this is just something that came about, but I will say the Marine Corps community has coalesced behind this. I mean, the Marine Reconnaissance Foundation has been absolutely wonderful. There's been other Facebook groups and organizations that have posted about this and really just, hey, how can I help? What do you want me to do? So that's been incredible. And every time I talk to not only Marines, but just service members in general, when they hear about this project, I mean, they just get fired up. And That's what's wonderful about working on projects like this. You know, obviously seeing it come to fruition is the end goal, but really you have to enjoy the journey because you get to meet and talk with people you may have never met or talked with. And you hear about their service stories. You hear about, you know, their funny times in the military or, you know, their grandfathers or fathers or mothers. So it's just an incredible way to connect with people. And, you know, that's really the joy I get out of this. Obviously, you know, working with the Whitney family and everyone else, that's the true joy I get from it.
And Stephen, if people are interested in finding out more or checking out the petition, I mean, is there a website they can go to? Where can they go to find out more about this issue that you've brought up?
Yeah. So, you know, I haven't had the chance to make a website or anything, but if anyone would like to find more, they can email me directly. I have my phone or email on me all the time because that's my mode of communication with journalists and organizations right now. It's Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N, period, Arango, A-R-A-N-G-O, at law, L-A-W, .ua.edu. And they can email me directly. And I'd love to, if they have input, constructive criticism, or just want to hear more about it, please tell them to email me.
You know what I like seeing is a student down at the University of Alabama, where everybody seems to be focused on football for about 9 months out of the year, that there is an Alabama student who's actually looking at some other things going around out there and taking a look at trying to bring some awareness and trying to bring some recognition to a man who certainly sounds like he gave a lot for this country. And that, of course, is the statue for Captain George Whitney, the bust. When it comes to the memorial, I mean, is it just everything going to be by donation? Is there a financial concern for this? How are you, if you get the amount of signatures, and what is the target amount of signatures, I should ask, and then what's the plan if you do reach that?
Absolutely. So, you know, there really isn't a set number of signatures. You know, the petition, and I've never done a petition, but it'll just keep going up. So, you know, if I get 1 million signatures, we'll keep going until the school says, all right, we found a spot. So if that's, you know, 2,500 signatures or 2.5 million, I'm not sure. And then financially, you know, I'm never going to turn down a donation. Anyone, if you feel led to do that, please, you can email me and I can give you the GoFundMe information. But financially, I'm not too worried about it. We've already raised about $3,000 and people are just been absolutely so gracious with their money. But really right now, it's just trying to convince the school that this is the right thing to do. And again, I know they have reservations and I can appreciate those because it is scary when you change things that, you know, in your life personally or in your business, and they have a bottom line and they have donors and board of trustees. But again, when it's just simply and clear cut the right thing to do, I think we just got to keep persevering and soon enough they'll realize it's the right thing to do.
Well, we've been speaking with Second Lieutenant Stephen Arango, United States Marine Corps, currently a student of law at the University of Alabama Law School, getting ready for perhaps a career in the Marine Corps as a JAG officer. Definitely getting ready to spend some time in there and currently working on this petition to basically have a bust created of Captain George Whitney to put on the Bates College campus that is in the state of Maine, a small liberal arts school. Captain Whitney was a United States Marine who then joined the CIA and was killed in action while serving with the CIA overseas. So, Second Lieutenant Arango, we want to thank you so much for your time this morning. Hey, maybe you'll be a captain someday, but I'm not giving out promotions here.
No, please. Still a boot second lieutenant. Don't worry about that, sir. But I really appreciate you having me today, and thank you so much.
Well, it's absolutely been our pleasure, and you have been listening to The Morning Briefing for Tuesday, October 24th, 2017. Coming up tomorrow, we've got a very special guest coming on the show because, well, we have special guests almost every day. But tomorrow, Senior Chief Don Shipley. If you don't know the name, you're going to learn it tomorrow. Senior Chief Shipley, he is a retired United States Navy SEAL. He is still doing amazing work, particularly when it comes to outing those folks who decide they want to pretend that they're SEALs. Some of them decide they want to pretend doing it to national news outlets like Fox News. Yeah, did you hear about the guy the other day? Hey, he was on there. He made a big, beautiful presidential seal, does great glass work, and he was a SEAL as well. You know, SEAL creates the presidential seal. Don Shipley said, hey, I don't recognize that guy. Looked him up. Turned out, guy wasn't a SEAL. Yeah, we're going to talk about that story and so much more about his career, his time after, what he's up to now. Senior Chief Don Shipley coming up on tomorrow's Morning Briefing. Thank you so much for joining us today. Hope you have a great evening. See you tomorrow.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.